thanks for coming on with us today, everybody. Appreciate that. This is the Valley Outdoors. We've got Ava's here today.
Of course.
Don.
I'm here.
And me, I'm Eric. We are the Valley Outdoors. We've got a big show today. I mean, this is going to be a lot of fun. We've got Brian Nerbon from the Minnesota DNR. He's a Region 3 Fisheries Manager. And he's going to respond to some of the things we had talked about previously with some of the back and forth going on with Mille Lacs. What's really going on and how is it being managed? So that is going to be a very interesting conversation, to say the least. We've got that. We're going to talk a little about steelhead regulations in the Michigan area. Is it affecting the traffic? So a lot of stuff coming up. You're going to want to hang out. Stay tuned.
Avid outdoorsmen know that heading to the field without all the advantages, not a good idea. Most importantly, a stable shooting platform. Having the right platform can be critical to success. Field Optics Research is the industry leader, offering the most advanced, lightest, and stable tripods on the market. It's stability you need when that once-in-a-lifetime shot is in your crosshairs. Field Optics, the ultimate tripod for hunting, shooting, long-range precision shooting, spotting scopes, and outdoor photography.
Links to Field Research Optics available on thevalleyoutdoors.com.
Eric Olson here, professional walleye tour champion, avid outdoorsman, and host of the Valley Outdoors radio show. Aquatic invasive species, or AIS, threatens not only our rivers and lakes here, but everywhere we boat. They come in many forms, and they love to hitch a ride to the next body of water on your boat or trailer. Join me to stop the spread of AIS by cleaning all weeds and aquatic material from your trailer before leaving the launch ramp. Drain live wells and clean areas that don't drain completely. Plus, don't forget to pull the plug. Clean, drain, dry. Together, we can make a difference. Hey, Don, Ava, how are you guys doing?
Great.
We're doing great.
I am super excited about this. You know, it's important to have a balanced kind of an understanding when you talk about news. And today we have Brian Nerbon on, which is really going to be cool, from the DNR Region 3, and he's going to talk about the regulations on Mille Lacs and trying to create some balance. What's the opposing view, and what are they going to do?
What can they do?
Yeah.
So we'll let him share that with us.
The numbers are way down. The water temperature is way down. Everything is, but apparently there's not much give. So we'll find out. I don't know. I'm leaving that to be discovered on air. So speaking of regulations, Don, this is one of the things that's come up. I've wanted to talk about this for a while. But what's going on in the Michigan streams? There's been some changes in regulations, and they've moved in the streams to one fish a day in the Michigan streams. And
are you talking about for this fall?
This last period. It's been for about just about a year.
And okay.
So the conversation comes up. Do regulations keep people from fishing? I know you're, in my mind, I know what your answer is. What's your answer?
Well, in my mind, I would say, if it was me, it would say no. Because it's not about keeping the fish, it's about fishing, catching, and enjoying the outdoors. If you have the opportunity to take a fish, I mean, I don't know, does this go across all species?
In this case, it's stream steelhead.
Okay. I mean, there's got to be more to the story.
No. They
just reduced it to one.
They reduced it to one steelhead. Type 3 and type 4 trout streams, and it's basically 1 over 20 inches, and that's it.
And nothing under 20 inches? Has to be over 20?
Has to be over 20 inches. Okay. And, you know, the what I find, and the reason I bring this up, Don, is you have two separate things going on, and it fits into our conversation that we're going to have regarding Mille Lacs. Mille Lacs has gone to the tightest of the regulations at zero take. It's catch and release only. Right now, even last winter, you know, it was a reduced number of people. Business was down 80% with the ice fishing. because the ice fishing was
so difficult. Well, that was because
so
of the warm weather,
right?
Primarily.
Right. And now the summer business is way off. Way off. Not even in the ballpark. And so really the question comes in, by virtue of how the regulations go into play, how is it affecting the participation in the given outdoor sport per se? In this case, let's stick with fishing. How hunting's different, but in many ways, but in the fishing side of it, how does that affect? How does that really deal with? And one of the impressions on this particular article is Bob Gwiz off of Outdoor News. And one of the things he said, if you look at it, it's also reduced the social interaction that happens when you do the fishing, because some guys are like, you can't catch any fish. Why go there? You can't keep any fish.
You can't keep any fish. There's a difference.
Right. So prime example comes in. We're heading up to Devil's Lake this coming weekend. If we were, we looked at a lot of areas. One of them was, well, maybe go to Mille Lacs. And they said, you can't keep any fish. And we all, everybody in the group, 10 guys said, forget it. Not going. Let's go to Devil's Lake. So it immediately, that's 10 people for 5 days that out the door. So how is it really impacting the state, but how is it impacting business?
Right.
And
well, there's going to be an economic impact to it.
Yeah.
I think the thing that you have to be aware of is when you got, in every state's got a Department of Natural Resources of some sort, they are basing that on the fishery itself and the science and taking care to make sure it's a healthy fishery. I don't know this would be a good question that we can ask later, if they take into consideration the economic impact that may or may not have on the surrounding area.
I think that would be huge.
Yeah.
And there is a way to measure it. It's absolutely a way to measure it.
Yeah.
But I think something has to be looked at in more than just one way. As I always have said, regulations many times create a political football. They're not regulated just for the resource. And then
you say political football, but like I say, maybe through the eyes of the department, they're not looking at it politically at all. They're looking at trying to do the best they can on the resource.
Some situations, that's true. Others, I know for a fact, it's not.
Okay. Well.
And that's the part that always, I'm not going to state what and where and how I know that, but I will just say that it needs to be looked at from more than one angle, and it needs to be transparency, because right now, it's unfortunate, but, you know, if you look at that area, it's the transparency is not necessarily there. And this is in Michigan, so who knows? But I think it's impacting. It's unfortunate because trout fishing is an amazing participation and a good way to get kids out fishing, too. So tell you what, we're going to be right back with Brian Nurbon from the Minnesota DNR Region 3 Fisheries Manager. You're going to want to stick around. Hang tight. Welcome back, guys. And of course, we always invite you to check us out. Where, Don?
On thevalleyoutdoors.com.
And Facebook. Check us out and look at what is going on there. Lots of cool stuff. And of course, we always talk about the, what do you call it? Interactive map for the DNR. You punch on any piece. Any state of the union, and you're going to be able to find out what is going on there. Log in and find out. Speaking of the DNR, we have got Brian Nurbon from the Minnesota DNR. He's a Region 3 Fishery Manager. Brian, good to have you with us. Appreciate you coming on. Thank you very, very much. How's things in your world up to the Northwoods?
Things are going all right for me. Happy to join.
Glad to have you. So, Brian, back and forth, a lot of things have gone on in recent months regarding the Mille Lacs scenario, the limits, and, you know, arriving at whatever limit that there has been. So give people some ideas on what you guys do to look at a limit or a fishing regulation on a lake and modifications to that. What methodologies do you guys employ to say, okay, this is how many fish we can take? How does that go? How does that work?
I will try to keep it short, but there's a lot of steps.
Okay. I knew it's a long answer, but go ahead.
All right. So we'll start out. We do our assessment netting every fall to see kind of an index of what the walleye population is looking like in the lake. Every 5 years, we'll also do what's called a population estimate, where we actually do mark and recapture to try to get a truer sort of index of what the population is in the lake for the walleye. All that information gets fed into a model that we run on computers that basically simulates what's happening with the walleye population and kind of tracks what the population numbers are and sizes of the fish. So that all that information helps us to then understand where the walleye population is at. And at that point, we'll meet with the tribes that we share management of Mille Lacs with to talk about what we were going to set the harvest level for the coming year at. And so we'll use those numbers as a guidepost for kind of where the harvest would be if the population goes down a little bit. Likely the harvest will go down, and vice versa. If the population is going up, we'll probably look at maybe bumping up the harvest. That harvest gets split between the state and the tribes. It's not quite 50-50. The state gets a little bit higher than 50% of the harvest. And from there, both parties are in charge of managing their harvest. So the tribes will figure out how they're going to manage their share of the harvest through the harvest that they do, and then the state does the same. And so the state then is in turn kind of tasked with figuring out, all right, we've got a certain number of pounds of walleye that the state is going to harvest for the year, or could harvest for the year. And then we've got to figure out, all right, what's a fishing regulation that will get us in the ballpark of that number? And so this is where things get really tricky, because we have to estimate things like, how good is the walleye bite going to be next year? Are people going to catch fish all over the place, hand over fist, or is it going to be a real tight-lipped bite where they're not going to catch many at all? And we can estimate some of that based on the forage pot in the lake at the time. We've got netting that we do that indexes that. We also can look at the fall catch rates that we saw in our creel survey, where we're interviewing anglers, and that gives us an indication of what the fishing is going to be like the following spring. Because the same forage is present in the fall as there is in the spring. Then we also have to estimate how many anglers are going to show up at the lake and go fishing, because the actual take of fish out of the lake is the number of people that show up, you know, how long do they fish times the catch rate. And then the other thing the state has to account for is hooking mortality. And so we've got to be able to estimate how many fish are going to basically die from being caught and released during the summer. And that's a function of water temperature. So the warmer the water temperatures get during the summer, the more likely that fish are going to die when they're caught and released. And so we account for that in a formula that, based on a few studies we've done on Mille Lacs about, you know, exactly tracking what hooking mortality is. So all those things then we can plug into another model that says, all right, well, if we use this regulation, let's say, you know, a catch and release with May harvest of a certain size of fish, we can estimate how many pounds of walleye that's going to produce under some assumptions about how good the fishing is going to be, how many anglers are going to show up, all those things I just talked about. So we're making educated guesses on what those numbers are going to be every year, and sometimes we do better than others. How's that for an explanation?
I like it. It's concise as you possibly could make it. Now, the question that has come up many, many times over, and I've asked way back Tom Landwehr era, we were up doing a governor's opener up at Gull Lake, and we were talking about test netting. And test netting, mm-hmm. At that time, I said, are you still test netting the same spots you had before? He said, well, there's reduced walleye populations. And I said, so are you still test netting the same spots? And he said, yeah, absolutely. Are we still test netting the same spots we have for many, many years to determine accuracy?
Yeah, so we do use the same locations every year, and I'll tell you the reason for that is that it helps us to have those consistencies about the time of year we do the netting and the locations we do the netting because that helps us to be able to compare it to past years. Yeah, we could move the nets around, and maybe in certain places where we think the fish are going to be at a certain time of year, maybe we catch more fish. But we wouldn't really know what that meant because we can't compare it to past years. And so that consistency is really important. But I understand where anglers are coming from in that, you know, we've been talking about this as a changing lake, the water's getting clearer and other things. And so fish might be using different habitats at different times of the year, and maybe our index isn't as consistent as we think it is. And that's why we do that population estimate every 5 years, because that's a completely independent estimate where we go out and set trap nets and electrofish in the shallows when the fish are in there spawning, and mark all those fish. So we'll target, like, try to target 20,000 fish that we'll tag. Sometimes we get there, sometimes we don't, but that's our goal. And then a few weeks later, we go out and do short-term gill net sets to try to recapture those fish. And those happen all over the lake. It's not set locations for that. We're looking all over the lake to do those gill net sets to recapture fish. And basically that ratio of captures that we get, the number of fish that are marked versus unmarked, helps us to calculate what the total population is. And what we've been seeing over time is that our population estimates and that model I talked about earlier, that computer model that uses the fall index netting as well as that population estimates to track the population, our population estimates that we've been doing has tracked really well, and it continues to track really well with what our model is telling us for the number of fish that are out there. So we at the department feel like the numbers we're using are still pretty valid.
So that really bodes me to ask, if we're looking at significant changes within the fishery, which I know is happening, and I think you guys know what's happening as well, if we're still using traditional locations for netting, the water temperatures are going to be warmer. The fish have obviously migrated and moved in the same test net time periods as well. Is it or would it not be prudent to align a different test methodology with the netting population that you use and create that correlation? So you do have a correlation to say, okay, this is what's going on. We're seeing a definite delta between where we've been netting and where we're seeing more of the fish. In talking to several people using the forward-facing sonars, where you don't have to be intrusive into it, significant changes in the fishery have occurred because of the weed populations of fish, significant changes within the habits of fish on that lake. And it's happened in a lot of places, whether it's down here in the river or not. So I guess the question becomes, the test nets, the fish have become much smarter. And in fact, one period of time, the private contractor was hired to put videotapes in front of a test net to see exactly what would happen with walleye. And they found out that they actually had become accustomed to it, and they swam up to the net and backed away from the net and went the other way. And so a lot of different things going on. And my thought is, with temperatures changing, would it not behoove the state to look at, okay, do we want to approach this from how do we end up migrating to a different methodology so that we can create a good vision of what's really going on? Because I'm in the middle of everything. I'm hearing people that are fishing the lake saying, this is crazy. The number of fish that they're saying are here is not true. There's so many more fish in this river, in the lake. It's off the charts. The same thing with bait fish. They're seeing, the question comes in. So that's my question. You know, is there a way to create a functional basis for what you have, create a correlation between a different methodology and say, all right, we are seeing significantly different amounts of fish in these two spots, and this is consistent, and it's crazy how many fish we're seeing in these other areas. Maybe we should migrate and then start looking at testing that would create the correlation. Just something that comes up in my thought process. And here's the main reason why. A prime example is method testing and methodologies. We got the report, 15,000 man hours created 6 keeper walleyes. That somehow to me is incomprehensible how that could even be possible. And that's in the ice fishing scenario, because the statement, as you know, came out and it was put out there that because of the heavy take rate over the winter this last season, that we were not going to have a take rate on Mille Lacs. So given that particular scenario, we all know that there was hardly any ice fishing that was taking place on Mille Lac. The businesses were down over 90%. How do we look at that and correlate that to say that's an accurate representation of what the lake, what's going on with the lake, to say there's a heavy take rate when there was hardly anybody on the lake? That's really the questions that are being posed to me as a person. It's people are like, hey, you got to ask questions. And I said, okay, I'm good to go.
Sure.
I'll ask them. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. So yeah, a couple different things you hit on there. I'll try to touch on that winter creel result that you were talking about. So that was from the first period of the winter creel. So the first few weeks of ice fishing. And if you know Mille Lacs, you know that the bays in the south end of the lake are what freezes first. They tend to be shallower, weedier sort of habitat, really not very prime walleye habitat. And so the fishing that's going on out there a lot of times isn't even targeting walleye. It's targeting northern pike and perch and things like that. And we've actually done winter creels for several years where sometimes we go out there in the early ice period and sample that, you know, first couple weeks where it's just those southern bays. And the results are actually almost identical to what we saw this year, where we see a decent number of hours of fishing and almost no walleye harvested or caught. It's just a factor of the habitat where people are fishing at that early ice period of the time. So that I think is just kind of a weird little anomaly of that early creel period. And we've got several years that show the same pattern.
Hey, Jason.
So you talked a little bit too about
Brian.
Go ahead.
Don wants to throw in a question real quick.
It's directly related to the question that Eric asked, but I mean, Mille Lacs over the last several years has had a reduced harvest or a reduced harvest rate.
Safe harvest, yeah.
And, you know, it's always in my lifetime been known as a walleye factory. What does the department attribute the decline in the population if there's no take rate?
Yeah, so it's definitely a changing lake, as we kind of talked about earlier. The water started getting clearer in the 90s, probably due to the Clean Water Act in the 1970s that required people to start updating their septic systems, and some of the towns around that have their own water treatment system had to upgrade their wastewater treatment systems so that there was less nutrients literally going in the lake. And so we started to see the lake clear up. And as you know, with walleye, they're a fish that actually prefers a little bit cloudier water. And that extra productivity from those nutrients probably also caused there to be more algae blooms and more zooplankton. That energy just trickles up the food chain to the forage fish that walleye are eating. And then the other change that's happened in the early 2000s to around 2010, we started to see invasive species show up in the lake, specifically zebra mussels and spiny water flea. And both of those take a tremendous amount of energy out of the system and tie it up in places where really not a lot of organisms get to use it. So all those zebra mussels that are living on the bottom of Lake Mille Lacs, almost nothing eats them. And so it's sort of an ecological dead end where all of that energy is getting stored up in those places. And spiny water fleas is another example of that. They eat zooplankton. They compete with other fish like tulipy that also eat zooplankton. And so there's less forage for those species that, again, trickles up to the walleye. So those are some pretty big changes.
Do you see a decline as well in the forage base?
Yeah, we've seen, especially in tulipy, they're also probably reflecting a warmer climate. Mille Lacs, although it's a really big lake, it's not a very deep lake. And so tulipy really like colder water. And if the water temperatures get too warm, they can have die-offs some years, and maybe anglers have seen that in some years on Mille Lacs. We haven't seen much recruitment of tulipy for a number of years either, so they aren't, you know, succeeding in spawning and getting a hatch that actually grows to sizes where we start seeing them in our nets later on. And so, yeah, the tulipy population is quite a bit down, and the perch population, although we've seen a little bit of a bump lately in perch, it's still not what it was. And we've seen more, sort of, again, inconsistency in the reproduction of yellow perch. And that was what we saw last year with a pretty poor yellow perch year class that resulted in some pretty high catch rates in the fall and then again in the spring. and as well as the winter with the walleye fishery, because there wasn't that much forage out there, so the fish were hungry.
Brian, Don's got one more. We're going to run short on time, but Don's got one more for it.
Well, it just confuses me, because if we still have the forage for the walleye, I'm not sure why the walleye is declining. Unless there's, the catch rate is much higher.
Well, like I said, those perch and tulipy numbers, those are the prime forage for them.
Yep.
Those are the things that they eat. And so especially the young of the year perch, that's the primary forage for all the walleye, pretty much. The bigger ones can eat bigger perch if they have to, but they prefer to eat those young of the year because they're more abundant and they're easier to catch. So the declines in those forage species have certainly been affecting walleye, and we've seen that in the condition of the walleye. So we do weight and measurements, length and weight measurements of every fish we catch in our index netting, and the fish have basically gotten thinner over time, and it's a reflection of just
Brian,
not as much forage out
I
there.
Thank you for the time. This has been awesome. The education is fantastic, and it's amazing when 18 minutes goes by and nothing flat. So I certainly appreciate you taking the time. The education for everybody out there to understand what's going on in Mille Lacs is a real important piece of this puzzle. So education wins every time. If you know what's going on, then we can all make better decisions, and that's really what it comes down to. So I really appreciate you coming on with us, Brian.
Appreciate the opportunity, Eric. Thanks.
You bet. And that is Valley Outdoors. Thanks for joining us, guys. We certainly appreciate it. We thank Brian Nirvan from the Minnesota DNR, Region 3 Fishery Manager. And for Ava, Don, and myself, we are out. Have a great weekend.